Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to some inspiring and influential women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Sam Baker. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hi, Nikki. I don't feel very influential or inspiring this morning, but yeah, I'll do my best.
Oh, you're very influential and inspiring. Sam Baker is a journalist, a broadcaster, and the former editor-in-chief of some of the UK's biggest women's magazines before launching the women's lifestyle platform The Pool, with co-founder radio broadcaster Lauren Laverne, and now is founder and host presenter of The Shift podcast. So, Sam, what a lot you've been doing. Now, where have you been locked up then, Sam?
Oh, God, how long have you got? So, I'm in Edinburgh. So, if you've got to be locked up somewhere, then I recommend Edinburgh as a jail venue.
Beautiful city, yes.
Yeah, gorgeous. So, we moved here last summer, but before that, so the first lockdown, we had sold our house and we had a 3-4 week gap between selling our house and buying our new place up in Edinburgh. So we moved into my brother's spare room just for 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh no, and then got locked down.
And then we got locked down. So 4 months later, we moved. So, you know, one extreme and the other.
You said you were moving to Scotland, then you said you weren't moving to Scotland, and then the world changed, didn't it? And actually, you've got it all in Edinburgh. You've got the beach, I used to live up there myself, actually. You've got all the walking, all those massive hills to get really fit. And the festival is coming back. I know it's a limited version. It's an outdoor, isn't it? 3 venues. But Phoebe Waller-Bridge, president, are you going to be hanging out with her?
Oh, yeah, hardly. But yeah, I mean, it was weird. Our first August, you know, because Edinburgh's the most amazing city. Like you say, one direction you've got mountains, the other direction you've got sea. It's got this great cultural hub. There's so much going on. And we already had loads of friends here. And then our very first August here, tumbleweed, no festival.
The first time in, what, 20 Yeah, 50 years or something.
Like 70 years.
70 years, gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was from one extreme to the other, because I can't say I missed the naked jugglers on every street corner, but it was very strange. So I'm really looking forward to it coming back.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. I'm planning on heading up there myself, actually. And the new, you know, with Phoebe Waller-Bridge leading some, assumably, you know, female-oriented plays and focus and everything, it'd be really good. We both need to interview her, don't we?
I think we get in the queue, don't we?
Oh, definitely. Now, it's slightly easier for creatives or authors in lockdown, isn't it? Or do you feel any signs of madness?
Oh, God. I haven't. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I've spoken to, I'm not going to say in my podcast, but for The Shift, I've spoken to lots of authors who've said, oh, it hasn't really been very different. But I, and certainly a lot of people I know, have actually have found it really difficult. Some people, because they've been homeschooling kids and stuff. But, you know, I don't have children. I've really struggled. I mean, I wrote the last lockdown, I did write the book, The Shift. And I feel really grateful to have had the podcast, because the podcast has kept that connection with the outer world. And I know that most weeks, I'm going to speak to a really interesting woman, maybe somebody I already know, maybe somebody I don't. And so that kind of structure and that contact has kept me sane. But I'm halfway through a fiction contract. I haven't written a word.
Probably got complete writer's block. I'm not surprised. You know, it really messes with our heads, doesn't it? Whatever we've got in our lives, too much time alone, you know, we need humans, we're missing hugs. Normality's semi-returning, but we can't suddenly press a happy button, can we? You know, in terms of, we're okay now.
I don't think we're designed to live like this, are we? No. And it's like somebody, I can't take credit for this, but I saw somebody saying, probably on Twitter, you know, it's a bit like, how are you supposed to go and be creative if all you've talked about for the last, I don't know how many months, is whose turn it is to empty the dishwasher.
It's not very interesting, is it? Yes. I said to someone the other day, what 2 to 3 words would describe how you feel? Because as creatives, you know, and fellow writer, trying to explain how you feel is hard enough, isn't it? And someone used the words jittery and fragile the other day. And I thought, that is such a good way, isn't it? Jittery, roller coaster. Sometimes you're really up, sometimes you're really down. You know, the highs are higher, the lows are lower. It's really bizarre, extreme.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You said use the word roller coaster, because when you said what three words, the words that instantly came into my head were up and down.
Oh, really? So that's yours, up and down and roller coaster. I think it is.
You wake up in the morning and you've got loads to do, but you feel like, oh, here we go again.
Here we go again. And can you sleep? Lots of people can't sleep, or their brains playing lots of weird things out in their mind.
I am having the weirdest dreams, but I didn't dream at all for decades, which was to do with, I kind of go into the book and we won't dwell on it now, but I was in a very difficult relationship when I was at university, and it took me about 30 years to deal with it. And during that time, I didn't dream at all, except I would have this one recurring nightmare. And it's like, since I finally had that dealt with and had some therapy and treatment and all of that, in my late 40s, around when I was 50, since then I have dreamed like a nutter, and crazy dreams, but I never really understood what people were talking about before that, when they talked about their crazy dreams, because I just used to think, well, I either don't dream at all or I have this one recurring nightmare. But now I have like bonkers dreams. I enjoy them.
You poor thing. And you know that this podcast, the Influential Women podcast, is about adversity and how strong women survive and thrive, like you have, and come back from lessons and experiences like that. So that will help people going through trouble at the moment, as well as your exciting podcast that we're going to come and talk on now. So was it in lockdown that you introduced your new podcast, The Shift? That's what you touched on. You said it was.
It was and it wasn't. So I had, as you alluded to in the intro, I had launched and left the pool, and it had folded. I had a slightly early perimenopause, which I didn't really know what it was. I just thought I was going doolally, which is a really common thing. And then my agent said to me, "Look, you should. Why don't you write about it? Why don't you write about the journey through it?" Because I was so shocked by the silence, really, around menopause. And that's already improved in the last year. But even so, it was like, it was tumbleweed out there if you tried to talk to anybody about menopause. And the kind of shame, like with women, I feel like women aren't allowed to age. And if they dare to, then they need to do it very quietly away from everybody else. So, I wanted, and you talked about Phoebe Waller-Bridge earlier, and what happened was I saw that episode of Fleabag where Kristen Scott Thomas is, you know, she's that amazing, sexy 60-something character, and she describes menopause as, you know, basically absolutely shit, but on the other side, absolutely incredible. And I just thought, A, I've never seen a menopausal woman who's so sexy on screen, and sexy in a female way, you know, as opposed to like a male gaze way. But also, I've never seen it described as a positive experience. And so I wanted to write about that. So
brilliant.
To go with the book, I thought, well, I'll talk to, because I was interviewing loads of women for the book anyway. I've spoken to about 100 women. And I thought, well, why don't I do a podcast that also talks about that experience? So I had the first series of the podcast ready to go about 4 months. Yeah, so it was going to go out spring last year, and the book was coming out in autumn. Wow. Then lockdown happened, and so did, I mean, every sod and their mum and their dog did a podcast from their bedroom, didn't they? Yes. And I just thought, I just don't want it to be a lockdown podcast. I want it to have more longevity than that. So I didn't actually put it out until August, so it's just gone into its fourth series.
Brilliant. And what a brilliant name as well, The Shift. It's so much nicer than The Change, isn't it? It just sounds like it's a sort of like shifting gear almost, isn't it?
And exactly, and it has a forward momentum, which I really like, whereas The Change, it feels like The Change is something that's done to you, and The Shift feels like a thing that you do. Now obviously that's not 100% true, because you know, we're all gonna have,
but you keep your power, or you get your power back, don't you? Because you said it's sharing the truth from women post 40, and in your taster trailer for the podcast you described your 40s as a bit shit. Was that how it felt?
Yes, yeah. And I actually, it was really interesting because I wrote this mammoth proposal for the book, about 15,000 words. And I couldn't think of what to call, you know, the first half and the second half. I knew I wanted to call the second half The Shift. And I just thought, oh, bugger it, I can't think of anything. So I just wrote The Shit and The Shift. And I kind of always intended to change it. And so when the publisher who the editor who bought it, I sat down with her and I said, oh, I will change that. I just couldn't think of anything. She was like, oh, no, I love that. So there stayed.
And it's just one extra letter, isn't it, from shit?
Yeah, it was a painful few years, but it was worth it.
So the perimenopause, you felt isolated and anxious and practically invisible. That's how you described it, and hot, but not in a good way. But now you feel amazing.
Well, like I said, up and down. I think the thing that nobody really tells you is, my personal experience of it, everybody's experience isn't the same, although many women I've spoken to have said this, is that I feel like I spent most of my 20s and 30s and actually 40s trying to keep everybody pleased, trying to, I've never been a good confrontation person. I'm still not, but, I'm rubbish at saying no, terrible at confrontation, very much like, oh, if I do that, will that make that person happy? Not at any point really true to myself, and just too worried about what everybody thought. And all of that's gone. All of that's gone. So, of course, I do still worry a bit, but, partly that is to do with the treatment I had that I referred to earlier. But I do think that I had that. I went and dealt with that thing that plagued me since I was in my late teens because of going through the menopause. And, we talk about the ups and downs, but the ups and downs that I experienced in perimenopause, and it's actually pretty common, it was like nothing I'd ever experienced. Huge crises of confidence, massive depressions, anxiety, panic attacks, and that's alongside the brain fog. And I think, I don't know, really. Honestly, it was horrific. And if I had known, if anybody had said to me, that could be perimenopause, like I spend my life doing that, going, oh, you need to talk to the doctor, that could be perimenopause. Yeah. It just would have made everything a lot easier.
Well, no one tells anyone, do they? And, it's brave of you to share that and to change. And I think a lot of these important issues have surfaced in lockdown, haven't they? And it's okay now to talk about it. And, discussing mental health around the menopause, which I heard, you ask some of your guests, like Tracy Thorne and Jeremy Vine even talked about it on menopause recently, talking about the list of endless symptoms that people don't know about that can start as young as 40.
Well, they haven't even agreed how many there are.
And everyone's different, aren't they? Aches and pains or forgetfulness or emotional, and that support, you're getting that conversation going because of your brilliant experience and writing and editorial history, so that's brilliant. And the people that so that's brilliant. You've had great guests from Tracy Thorne to Sadie Frost, Maggie Farrell on imposter syndrome, Bryony Gordon on alcoholism, Emma Freud, the lovely Emma Freud, who I know you were really excited to interview her. I could hear that in your interview, and I'd love to talk to her. And Jo Wiley, you've got some great women on there, really inspiring. And a good question, asking Tracy Thorne how she felt mentally, that is similar to how we all feel now, isn't it? In terms of unable to really cope with what's going on.
Yeah, I think that the thing about the pandemic has been, it's just completely uncharted territory, isn't it? Yeah. So you could draw, you could draw a parallel, because even though every woman has been before us with menopause, it's so untalked about, particularly the mental health symptoms, because we all know we might have a hot flush or get a bit angry or, pad out around our middles, unfortunately. But, I think the people don't talk about mental health. People have never talked about mental health. And I know that it probably feels right now like everybody talks about nothing but mental health. But let's face it, we haven't got much else to talk about, have we?
I think that's a good thing. I interviewed Ruby Wax, for a London radio station probably 7 years ago, and no one talked about mental health then. Whereas now, I do with my teenagers or with my neighbours or whatever. Say, how's your mental well-being today? How are you really feeling? And that depth, which British people have always been so reserved and never really, said everything's fine even when it's not fine. I think it's good. We're getting that depth that we've never had. And, and congratulations on your book. It's your first non-fiction book, isn't it? I know you, last time I saw you, you were saying you write a book a year, which is amazing.
Oh, God. Well, that was the theory. I'm trying to think. It's probably, do you know what? I think it's 5 years since I wrote a novel, and I have had a bit of a block, and I've got an idea. And actually, I'm sitting here in my We could call it home office, or we could call it a box room. And I'm looking at this great big pile of research books for the next novel. And I, at the same time, my brain is thinking about anything else that I can do.
Are we allowed a teaser of what it's about or not?
No.
No, it's all very secret. How exciting, though. I mean, you know, I say I'm a writer. I've done, you know, papers and magazines and that sort of thing, but not, you know, books. I'd love to write a book. You've written so many books. Amazing. And we'll talk about those as well. And you've been in a bookshop, I saw on Twitter. You've missed them. I miss them. Just surrounded by books. It's just such a comforting feeling, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, in Scotland, we unlocked a little bit later. So yesterday was our first day.
Oh, was it?
Of shops being open and cafes being open. And do you know what? Last week, the weather was gorgeous. So sitting outside with a pint would have been a perfect way to bunk off work. Uh-huh. This week it is pissing.
Isn't that typical when you've got to be outside in a coat? But you can be in a bookshop. Are you allowed to touch the books yet? Because I hate not being able to read the first page and look at the back.
Oh, I did touch.
Oh, because some of them, you know, around here, we weren't allowed.
But you do have to squirt on the way in, so maybe,
yes, I think maybe that was lockdown one.
We're a bit lost now in terms of what we're allowed to do. So amazing, you know, great accolade for your book, The Shift. Jojo Moyes says, joyful, positive, goes to all the places, highly recommended. And Emma Gannon says, a wonderful, generous mixture of no bullshit and a comforting hug. So how about that, with some great names there. So Sam, you and Lauren Laverne, the fab broadcaster, launched The Pool, the award-winning digital platform, and you were ahead of the game, weren't you? That was back in 2015, and you know, it was your baby, both of you, and such an amazing missed platform. Do you think it was too early?
Yeah, I think a lot of things, to be honest. But yeah, I do think it was a little bit too early. And I think it's telling that nobody really has launched into that space since it folded. And I think that shows you just how hard it is to make digital media pay, really. It wasn't hard to make the audience love it. I still get messages every week. I get a message from someone saying I really miss The Pool.
Yeah, because it was just unique, wasn't it? I mean, it combined Lauren's experience of living by the clock with radio broadcasting and your expertise in media and women's lives. It was just genius, wasn't it? And won an award, a Webby Award, didn't it?
Yeah, it won a Webby and a Lovey and a Drum Online Media. Yeah, I mean, it won loads of awards. I mean, I think we were the first people who actually took that, you know, because of Lauren's great radio experience and my magazine experience, we put those two things together and we said, well, you know, we know that women still want amazing content that really speaks to them, but we also know, and I'm like waving my phone at you, we also know that this is where women are.
It is to be portable on the move, and that's what people are doing in lockdown. And the fact that it's timed, you know, 2 minutes or download for 4 minutes, you could plan your day. Yes, I miss it too.
Because so many people do that now, I'd completely forgotten that we were the first people to do it.
Oh, you definitely were. You were the leader, pioneers. You should take a lot of credit for that. And you have been on all the things you've done. It was even described by J. Walter Thompson, Intelligence at the Cannes Lions, as a new vision of women's media that goes beyond the glossy. So, you know, you started with the glossies way ahead of time and took it into digital. And now, you know, podcasts are the way to go. So you started your journalism career in politics and then went on to be editor-in-chief at some of the UK's biggest magazines, including Cosmo and Red. Amazing magazines. How was that? I mean, different genres, politics to women, or is it the same?
No, I didn't. I studied politics at university, so I've got a politics degree. But I was never a politics journalist. I would have loved that, actually. And I think in many ways it's similar but different.
Yeah, there's still time, especially in Scotland at the moment.
When I was editing Cosmo, we actually ran a political campaign to persuade more young women to vote. And I interviewed all the party leaders at the time, which would have been, was Tony Blair, Charles Kennedy, and Michael Howard, and asked them, I mean, many questions that the readers had told us they were interested in. But one of the questions that I asked them was about a woman's right to choose an abortion, and found... we found ourselves on the front of the Mail and the Telegraph and on the Channel 4 News and, you know, and I'm being accused by Sunday paper columnists of having stitched Tony Blair up, you know, like, no, I asked him a question, And he answered. Yes. His answer was controversial.
Right.
Goodness me. Wow, you've interviewed some incredible people. And you took some amazing women on tour that I nearly came with you, didn't I, to the live stage event of your book launch, Life Honestly. Amazing, strong opinions from smart women. That must have been amazing too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that book, I'm so glad we did it now because it's all that's left. Yeah, there's a tiny bit of content on the Wayback Machine, but very little. So it's really, you know, somebody contacted me a few weeks ago and said, oh, I'm sorry to do this. You know, it's like when somebody walks into a bookshop and says, oh, I want that one with the blue cover, you know.
Yes.
Somebody messaged me and said, oh, I'm looking for this piece and I read it on the pool and it was really good and it was about mental health. And I just thought, yeah, so that was about a fifth of the content of the pool. And she described it to me and I thought, do you know what? I do remember that. And I looked and it was in the book. She went and bought the book.
As if the platform's gone, all of those articles have gone. That's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, the guy who took it over just, I can't talk about that for emotional and legal reasons. But yeah, he just...
But you,
there
you brought it into the world, that amazing creation, and good for you. It was genius, both of you. So you've written quite a few books. I mean, goodness me, you were writing one a year, crime to women's issues, from sexy crime thrillers to historical Anne Bronte's The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, rework, The Woman Who Ran. Amazing.
Well... I mean, the thing is, it isn't, I think technically I should have written one a year, but I have written five novels. I wrote two crime novels set in the fashion industry way back when. I mean, I'm never going to open one of those again because God knows how badly dated they are. I certainly know that everybody didn't have mobile phones. There were definitely answer machines. And then I wrote two books that were kind of commercial women's fiction set around... kind of with an issue at their heart. So the first one was Stepmother Support Group, which was about stepmothering, which was a subject that was close to my heart. And then the second one was about friendship and bereavement and cancer. But it was more cheerful than that, I promise. Mm. And then, as you say, The Woman Who Ran, it's actually contemporary. It's set kind of now-ish. But what I was doing was my favourite Bronte novel was The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. And so I was... taking that novel, which was, if you haven't read it, I really recommend it. Really radical, really radical for its time. And I think Anne was the most radical Bronte by a mile. You know, it's about a woman who left her husband, which she wasn't allowed to do. She painted in oils, which was a really masculine thing to do. And, you know, so he was an abusive alcoholic. And so I thought, what of that novel has travelled? What if I rewrote it? What would you keep and what would you change? And so, yeah, so actually I really loved writing that and I'm really proud of that book. That's the book that gave me the block, and I've written nonfiction since, but I really need to crack that.
Oh, that you need to go and visit Bronte country. That's what you need to do to reawaken.
Well, now the border's reopened, so we're allowed out. We're not.
It's not that far now, is it?
It's not too bad. It's not that long on a train down to...
That'll
get the senses going out in the fresh air there. There you are. You see, us creative thinkers need to get together more.
Do you know what? I think we do. I think that's the thing when you were asking right at the beginning about being creative. I think, you know, I'm not the most extrovert person, but I do need people around me.
Definitely. And actually, it's interesting you saying that, you know, you're a people pleaser and you're sort of more gentle in terms of that. But you write frank, funny and sort of empowering, don't you? And you support women's issues. And yet you were so senior as editor in chief, you know, all of the women that work for you must have been in awe, you know.
I don't know this. I mean, it's that weird thing, isn't it, of how you see yourself versus how other people see you. And I think, you know, I always felt like, you know, I always just felt like me, you know, not quite good enough. And, you know, I'm from a very ordinary background, and I didn't realise until I got to London that everybody hadn't been to state school and had a dad who was a builder and, you know, all of that. You get to London, which, you know, hopefully will change a bit now with lockdown. Mm. You get to London, everybody's, you know, especially in the media, which is a shocker, really, everybody is, you know, privately educated. Everybody's been to Oxford or Cambridge. Ooh. They, you know, they were at that point all white, you know, very few working class women then, very few working class people. But also at that point, I mean, I'm 54, so I went to university in the 80s, and, you know, women only made up about 15 to 20% of the university population then. You know, now it's they're 50%.
Yes.
So, you know, things have changed dramatically. But I always felt like that girl who kind of snuck through a crack, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you're very humble, Sam. I don't think so at all. I think it's your creativity in the way you write and the way you think, even though it's from a more gentle perspective, it works. You know, it's your humbleness that actually makes the difference, doesn't it? There's a lot of arrogant people out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I really, you know, the thing I always loved most about magazines, which is why in the beginning I really loved social media and the access that that gave the readers to, obviously that's changed a bit, particularly Twitter. But my favourite thing was always when you got a letter or an email or a tweet that basically said, you know, how did you know I was thinking that? How did you know? You got, it's like you're inside my head. And that's, you know, that's the shift achieved that too, which I really, you know, I really love. I get, you know, particularly when the book first came out, I was swamped with messages from women telling me their stories, and but also that kind of, oh, thank God, because I'm not going mad. And that's what I like, really. I like that connection. That's my thing, I think, the connection.
Definitely, you're resonating with the audience on a really real human level. And to have those, that's what people used to do years ago, you know, write to the editor, and to have that, you know, now on social media or to write to you, it's brilliant. So this Influential Women podcast is about adversity, and you've touched on, you know, some harrowing experiences that you went through. Is there anything else you'd like to share or elaborate on that you've had a setback with that you'd recommend?
Oh God, any more adversity? I mean, I think that, you know, people have, when I was thinking about this earlier, I was thinking, immediately thinking, but people have really terrible adversity, proper adversity, you know, that, you know, they're homeless and they have, you know, infertility and all that. So I feel like a bit of a fraud in that regard. But, you know, my adversity has been normal adversity, you know, a bad relationship, albeit a very bad relationship, you know, work setbacks, you know, the terrible, tragic demise of the pool and the way that happened, you know, but they don't feel, you know, like I say, it makes me feel like a bit of a fraud.
Not at all. I don't think that at all. You know, it was harrowing and heartbreaking when you lost that business. And to actually be affected and have crazy dreams by a relationship 30 years later is very troubling. And just knowing that you had therapy and got through that will give strength to people listening from whatever they're going through, and particularly in the pandemic. You know, their issues are huge to people. It doesn't matter what the issue is. It's still massive to the person dealing with it at that time. And you got through that and will help others with your strength. And you're just keeping going. Is that one of your philosophies, to just keep going?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think certainly I overrate resilience. But yeah, I think of myself as a resilient person. And I think that, yeah, that's really important. I mean, no one else is going to fix it. I think, I don't know, I can't remember who said it. It's basically about, you know, no one is coming to save you. You know, the princess needs to save herself. And I do think that that's absolutely true. And then the occasions when I have feel like I've ignored my gut, or I've kind of, you know, I don't know whether I've watched too much Harry Potter, but there is, okay, for any, stay with me, people. In The Prisoner of Azkaban, there is a scene where Harry is being attacked by Dementors, and somebody on the opposite bank of the river sends, God, I can't remember what they're called, but basically sends a spell, which is a big stack that makes the Dementors go away. I apologise if you have no clue what I'm talking about, but basically somebody saves him. And then they've got this magic thing that makes them go back and do it all again. And he's standing on the opposite side of the bank because he's gone back in time a few hours. Just stay with me. And he's watching himself and Sirius being attacked by Dementors. And he's saying to Hermione, because Hermione, the all-seeing wise one, you know, it's all right, my dad's coming. My dad's going to come and he's going to send the magic stag that will save me. And she's going, no, Harry, nobody's coming. And then he sends the stag that saves himself, you see?
Yes.
See, I was going somewhere logical. You're thinking, your face.
J.K. Rowling would be proud of you up there in Edinburgh, won't she? But no, that makes sense, because it means fix yourself rather than waiting for someone to fix you. And women are guilty of that, aren't they, in terms of waiting to be rescued because of all those childhood books and, you know, someone so will come along on a white horse.
Yeah, and so busy fixing other people too. That's
that's so true.
Thing. So by the time you've put everybody else's mask on, you're dead.
You're right. Oxygen ourselves first. And actually, if this has taught us nothing else, that's what we need to do, isn't it, with that self-care, self-resilience. Goodness me. So which strong women or men have inspired you? You've interviewed some incredible people. I saw you reported from the Michelle Obama event when she came to London. Did you meet her or interview her?
I mean, so many, but now I can't think of any of them. Interesting, because I ask a similar question. And I always am surprised when people struggle to answer it, and now I'm struggling to answer it. I want to say, if I could interview anyone, I'd love to interview Dolly Parton.
Oh, she'd be amazing, wouldn't she? She's probably open to it now. She's been so involved with COVID.
If I had to choose between Dolly Parton and Michelle Obama, I'd probably choose Dolly.
And how she's helped with COVID and, you know, a million funding and rewritten her song around it. It was hilarious.
All her literacy work, and I think she's incredible, because she's just quietly done her thing, got on with it, doing her thing.
And she looks sexy on the other side, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, like she says, I think it's all you know, she looks incredible and she chooses to do it her way, and she's not going to apologize for it.
Brilliant. She'd be a great interview. No, I'd love to hear that one. Oh, reach out, as they say in America. I'm sure she'd love it. So what's been the proudest moment of your career or life? I know you're not very proud of yourself, but you should be, because you've done amazing things. What's been the big one?
Well, no, I mean, I am extremely proud of the pool. I think we, you know, launched an amazing thing. We launched actually quite a lot of talented young women's careers, or helps them get from A to B. And I think we do change the way women's media, you know, wrote and interacted with its audience. So yeah, I'm really proud of that aspect of it.
You did, and the events and partners and everyone you teamed up with, you know, it was really sophisticated as well. It was very brilliantly done.
Yeah, and I'm really proud of the shift, because, you know, I've got, and they're all saved on my phone. I've got hundreds and hundreds, my poor phone memory, of messages from women just saying, thank you for writing this, you know. And I kind of, you know, selfishly, I wrote it for me. I just thought, I want to write the book that I wish that I could have read when I was 45, 46. Mm. And so I'm so proud that the book and the podcast really resonate with women, that it's made a difference to women. And I remember when the book, before the book came out in hardback, I was doing an interview with a website called The Flock, actually, which is really great little website, which is like a little bit like the pool. And the woman who set that up, Jen, I was being interviewed by her in a cafe in Edinburgh in that window last August when we were allowed in cafes. And we were sat there talking about it. And then this man came over and we both kind of looked at each other and went, oh, here we go. Kind of somewhere in his maybe 50s, 60s. And he said, I'm sorry, I've been listening to your, I hope you don't mind, but I've been listening to your conversation. And have you written a book about the menopause? And I said, yeah. And he said, can you tell me what the name of it is? Because my wife's having a really bad time.
Oh, wow.
And I'd like to buy it for her. And so I felt really bad, because I'd immediately judged him as some like creepy old man who was going to. And he just wanted to help his wife. And I just thought,
That's amazing.
God.
How amazing is that? There you are. Now, can we talk about where your passions are? How do you relax and spend time off when you love crime?
Well, it's so weird, isn't it, at the moment? It's so other. Yes. So, you know, at the moment, I just walk and read like that. Entirety of the rest of the country.
Yes.
And watch box sets. But you're right, I am absolutely passionate about crime. I absolutely love crime fiction. I love you know, Walter Presents. I'm never happier than when I am binging something with subtitles on Netflix where people are gorily murdered. I mean, ideally not the kind of, let's start this with a woman's body and then just...
Oh, really?
You know, so not that. But yeah, no, I'm a crime bore. That's the thing that probably a lot of people don't know about me. I would read crime fiction over anything else, given a choice. I mean, I read loads of other things, but...
Yeah. Actually, they are quite gripping, aren't they, those psychological thrillers? I quite like those as well. I'm a bit more daunted watching them, but you're braver than me.
And I love I love true crime podcasts.
Yes.
Gosh, and aren't they successful? The biggest genre. And charity-wise, do you still champion support for Refuge?
Yes, absolutely. Refuge is where my heart is. Partly because of my own personal experience of being in an abusive relationship when I was young, and coercive control, and also because a friend of my family was killed by her husband.
Oh my goodness.
When I was editor of Cosmo, which really, yeah, was really awful. So I already worked with them and did what I could to support them when that happened. And Sandra Hawley, who set up Refuge, wrote a book which I think it was published in the early 90s, late 80s, called The Charm Syndrome, which has been reissued and is now called Power and Control, but was the definitive book on what we now call coercive control. But back then, nobody really knew, you know, that bloke who, well, it's a classic coercive control situation. You know, your parents think he's wonderful and, you know, very charming man. And actually, in reality, you know, the other side of him is that he's not. So this book that she wrote was life-changing for me, and it's an incredible book, and I would still absolutely recommend it. She's just retired, but Refuge is just going from strength to strength, and they have... It's interesting, since I remember when I first joined Twitter, which would have been a decade ago, and, you know, saying that you supported Refuge or tweeting about domestic violence was a way to immediately lose loads of followers. It was really strange. Oh. Whereas now they have absolutely changed the conversation. They're doing amazing, amazing work. And I think it's, and certainly through, particularly through lockdown as well, it's been so important. And I saw, and also there are lots of youngish female MPs who are working really hard on this, you know, Jess Phillips and Stella Creasy, and, you know, there's when Sarah Everard was killed, you know, a few weeks ago, there was a massive outpouring. But, you know, Stella Creasy was tweeting last week, you know, she's still dead, and since she died, 16 women have been killed.
Gosh,
and you know, we need keeping that front and centre, because we have a real boredom threshold now, don't we? You know, in a kind of attrition, and things become a big issue and then they go really, really quickly. I mean, the fact that, you know, the Sarah Everard case kept its momentum going over about a week was fairly, you know, was fairly huge. So keeping, for Refuge, managing to successfully keep relationship abuse, coercive control, domestic violence, and the abuse of women by their partners or ex-partners, keeping that front and centre day in, day out is a massive task, and I think they do it brilliantly. So yeah, if you've got a spare tenner, give it to Refuge, because the other thing that's worth saying is that, you know, though Refuge are funded by local government, and local government is really, really under the cosh now because of the pandemic, and they're all being charged with massive, massive budget cuts, which strangely isn't being reported on, but is absolutely the case. And the first places to go are Refuge, so they're refuges. So they are all having their budgets cut.
And they've never before been so needed. And thank you for sharing that, Sam. And I saw on Facebook, they're just asking for various different levels of contribution that can help, you know, for a night or for accommodation or for urgent supplies or for things that women need with their children to get it to a safe place.
Yeah, they do a really good job of making it very clear where the money goes. So you can give them money every month like I do, but that, you know, if you've just got £10, you can say, I'd like to buy a night stay for a woman and her children, or I would like to buy an overnight kit, or I'd like to buy a birthday present for a child or something, you know. So it's very, they do a really good job of saying, these are the ways you can help, choose the way you can help.
Gosh, and people must help, because never before has it been so needed, and it must be so frightening in lockdown. And yes, thank you for that, to encourage people to actually reach out to Refuge and to donate. So do you have a mantra for living your life?
A mantra.
I did read a very old mantra in a magazine or online a very long time ago that you had said, actually, that said, if someone says you can't, prove them wrong.
Yeah, well, I think that was what I was just going to say.
I think it has
always been that, and I think it still is, really.
And have you proved some people wrong? I think you probably have.
Yeah, I think so. Well, mainly I was talking about a careers teacher when I was 15, who, when I said that I wanted to work on a magazine, but ideally smash hits, basically told me that, I mean, he actually said, girls like you don't do jobs like that.
No, and you so proved them wrong. And I hope, as editor-in-chief with the headed paper, you wrote to that.
I should have done. I'm sure he's long gone, but yeah, so that was what I was referring to then.
Fight, didn't it, to prove them wrong? Brilliant. And what's your next goal then, Sam? This book that will be inspired by you visiting the Bronte country?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've got a non-fiction proposal that's with my publisher at the moment. And actually, I'm loving the shift. I'm loving the shift podcast. And do you know what, you probably identify with this, I absolutely just love nosing into people's lives. So I love that, you know, the podcast gives me license to talk for an hour or so with a really fascinating woman who I might not otherwise get to talk to, and just ask really loads of really nosy questions. I absolutely love it.
Exactly, which is brilliant, isn't it? Well, you're my really fascinating woman today, and it's and actually it's very therapeutic as well, isn't it? Just chatting, and it sort of lets go of your own ego and just focuses on the other person and just listens, and it's really good in lockdown, isn't it, to be a podcaster?
Yeah. Yes, it really is.
There's a human out there. Lastly, what key message would you give to inspire and influence women or men? About a quarter of our audience is men, actually. And how to cope with what's happening right now? Is there one pearl of wisdom you'd leave with us?
Well, I kind of say as I say, not as I do. I would say just cut yourself some slack, you know, just don't beat yourself up. It's like, so you haven't, you know, learnt Spanish or, you know, made a documentary from your attic or so what, you know, so what? It's fine. Getting out. I remember when I was in a very bad place after the pool collapsed and I hadn't left the house for a couple of months. And I went, I thought, I've got to do this. So I was invited to meet a kind of a pre-book launch of Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, who I really admire. And so I went along and I swear, you know, I was wearing the same clothes I'd been wearing for 3 months and I couldn't string a sentence together. I just was in this room with all these incredible women thinking, why am I here? And the PR said to me, oh, would you like to meet Elizabeth? And I was like, dumb, nodding. And I went over and the first thing I said to her was, I haven't left the house for 3 months and I'm wearing the same clothes that I've... I mean, I'm sorry you meet Elizabeth. And that was what came out of my mouth. And she said to me, sometimes getting out of bed is the achievement.
Oh, bless her.
And I just thought, oh my God, I love you. I know, and I feel like crying now.
And it was her and that book. And that's probably what drove her to write that book. You know, was that escapism and that. Oh, bless
she,
you.
Yeah, she wrote the book she wrote, Big Magic, which is about creativity, which you, if you haven't read it, I think you'll really like it.
Oh, thank you.
It's an amazing book. But I just thought then, you know, you are a really special person because here is this mad woman who looks like she hasn't left the house for 3 months and I wasn't wearing my pyjamas, but I might as well have been. I had been a bit of a wreck and she was not fazed by all I had to say to Elizabeth Gilbert was, I'm wearing the same clothes I've been wearing for 3 months.
Amazing. But she knew that she was the reason that you went out and that was enough, wasn't it? That was, you know, amazing that she said that to you. But it was the fact you'd felt that low. And I saw you around that time, didn't I, in terms of when the pool had changed. And it understandably would have been devastating. You know, you'd put your life and soul into it. But Elizabeth Gilbert was there and you weren't going to miss that. And that was the brilliant thing and that inspiration from her movie. So that was joy to her as well, wasn't it? Even somebody that is this troubled with whatever they're dealing with in their life wants to come and see me. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You're very glass half full, aren't you?
Oh, bless you. Well, trying to be in this pandemic and even getting annoyed with myself that I am a positive and optimistic person. And it is quite difficult for a positive, optimistic person to be positive and optimistic at the moment. So that's actually quite a challenge too. But I do try and, yes, gratitude does help. And actually, one of the previous guests I've interviewed has said, when you're grateful, you can't be anxious or traumatized. And she said, try and think of 20 things, however small in pandemic, every day that really helps. And if you do it in the morning, at night, and in the shower, it really helps. And I go, oh, this shower cream smells of marshmallow and cheers you up. You know, it has to be something really tiny because there isn't much at the moment. But
I think that's really true, isn't it? I mean, and that's kind of like when we were talking about adversity. It's like, you know, people have been homeless, people have been trapped in, you know, locked down with their abuser. They have, people have lost their jobs, people have lost, you know, family. So people are going through such terrible times right now that, you know, those of us who aren't really need to smell the marshmallow scented shower gel.
But I don't know, I think I've changed my perspective from before, but thinking somebody else has it worse, to now thinking actually that's not being fair to yourself, that actually whatever you're feeling, that's what you're feeling, and actually it is valid. You know, even if you didn't get, you know, whatever you'd ordered online today and that upsets you, it's as comparable with something massive for somebody else, and we must all be gracious to ourselves like that and think of that shower gel. Exactly. Lovely to talk to you today, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Nikki.
Thank you for your wise words. Thank you for our uplifting chat. Lovely to chat to you again. You are one influential woman in media and broadcast. It's been a joy to chat to you today. Please share with your tribe. Good luck with the Shift podcast and the book, and supporting women through and beyond menopause, and with finding a safe place to shelter with refuge. The Influential Women's Podcast is exec produced and host presented by Nikki Bannerman and produced by Safran Mirza. Please binge listen to previous episodes on our channel and subscribe for free to your phone on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google and Spotify. Rate and review us and share with others to help us make more podcasts.